CFRC 101.9 FM, located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online at www.cfrc.ca. That's for those of you who might have just tuned in to this second hour. And in the second hour, again, from that August 6th and the Journey Continues open mic event, you'll hear a number of the same people reading again. Again, for the sake of time, I won't read through all the names. I introduce everybody before they read. I will in the second hour. But also, in addition to that, you're going to hear recorded reading by Jan Allen, a recorded performance by Ann Archer. And also in that second round group of poets that you've already heard from, there will also be a new voice you'll hear, and that is Remy Miller. Just the usual start of my hour announcement, occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. So I always give an option for those that, if they can't make the open mic, to share an audio file with me, an MP3, and I can include it at least in the show in this way. So coming up, back to back, you're going to hear first Jan Allen reading from her new work, Roadside, and then you're going to hear Ann Archer performing a musical piece with Katya called Eleanor Plunkett. I believe that's the title. Let's go ahead and jump right into it.
I'm reading an excerpt from, it's from the first chapter in a new project, a new novel-length project under the title Winter Grasses. Jazz couldn't believe it when the car began to shudder and skew hard to the left. Sheer bad luck. She wasn't even at Coburg, and somehow she had a flat. She threw on the flashers and eased onto the shoulder, edging as far as possible from the torrent of passing cars without toppling down the sun-drenched embankment and cursing lightly under her breath. She calculated the tire swap would delay her just enough to land her in the bulge of Sunday afternoon traffic entering the city. Why did this feel like a message? She hated going home. These family visits took too much out of her. Normally, the drive from Kingston was her favorite part. The spare was one of those hard, toy-sized ones. She pulled out the jack and lug wrench, turning them in her hands to figure out how they work. She just raised the car on the jack and was assessing the next step when a crunch of gravel alerted her to someone pulling over. A little blue Nissan came to a halt about 30 meters up the shoulder, and a slender figure, a man, she thought, emerged and started walking in her direction. Shit. She did not want help. She did not want to feel someone's do-gooder agenda or creepy insinuation into her life. After all her time in L.A., after what had happened there and what could have happened there on that one occasion, she doesn't do strangers. She thought about her Smith & Wesson in the glove box, but just pushed that thought away, instead crouching before the flat tire to slip the wrench over the first nut. The Good Samaritan paused a couple of car lengths away and shouted over the roar of traffic, "Need a hand?" Jazz shook her head and lifted a palm to say, "No, no thanks." The guy moved closer, frowning, so she stood and shouted, "Back off. I don't want help, yours or anyone's." He raised his hands in surrender. "Okay, okay, got it. I'll stand out here like a post. I'll wave away anyone who stops." He walked toward her as he said this, which alarmed her for a moment, and finally came to a halt, quite close now. He said something that struck Jazz. He said, "I'll be a help shield," and turned away to station himself at the road, arms crossed with his back to her, as if sulking, as if performing a bizarre, self-deprecating "fuck you." She didn't know whether to be annoyed or amused, but decided to ignore him and concentrate on removing the flat tire. The job wasn't going well. She leaned her whole weight on the tire iron, but the wrench slipped off the nut, and when she achieved a tight fit, the wheel rotated, but not the nut. This was taking a lot of time. She was getting nowhere. The sun was pouring down on her, raising lines of perspiration everywhere, and something was niggling in the back of her mind about the man from the Nissan and his funny, not funny bit. Helper guy was still standing by the highway, looking at the ground now, then west, as if considering leaving. Jazz shaded her eyes to scrutinize him. She figured he was 30 or so, a little younger than she, and unhappy, rumpled, as if life had crushed him in ways he'd failed to anticipate. It was just an impression, one she didn't care to dissect. His dark brown hair was grown out, tied back, but with strands escaping and spiraling in the hot gusts of the roadway. About his persistence, she wondered if he was mildly deranged, OCD, or just strong and stupid, with a misplaced need to be needed. He did not look stupid. Maybe, she told herself, he's really a really patient psychopath, but she had to admit that wouldn't sync with the crushed aspect. She took a few steps in his direction and saw that he donned wireframe glasses and was peering at his phone with brows in deep furrow. He fired off a message and glanced up to catch her observing him. Something passed across his face then, and he started to speak, but Jazz cut him off, yelling into the din of traffic, "If these off are still on, I do need help." He was staring at her, which she guessed she deserved, and then he swallowed with a little head bob and approached the car to study the situation. He put a hand on the jack and said, "Pro tip, loosen the nuts before you raise the car. Traction, you need traction." With this, he moved quickly into the task of tire changing, not explaining what he was doing nor even looking at her when she tried to be friendly, only chuckling sort of hopelessly and shaking his head when she asked if he was actually a mechanic. And she said, "Well, you said pro tip, so I thought maybe you were a pro." He wasn't interested in chit-chat. That much was clear. The guy stowed the damaged tire in her trunk and turned to leave, but Jazz stopped him, saying, "Look, I'm sorry I was rude." She held out her hand. "Thank you. I mean it. I couldn't have..." He took her hand, but cut her off, saying, "I recognize you. We've met. You're Jazz, right?" "Oh." She couldn't speak. He was watching her, his gaze steady, curious. His voice, yes. The roads seemed very loud now, unbearably loud. "Thank you."
Thank you.
heard two recordings sent to me this month. One, the first by Jan Allen with her reading, and Ann Archer with the duo Kasha, and that musical piece. As we move into the second round now of the And the Journey Continues, of the August 6th And the Journey Continues open mic. In it, coming up first in that round, you'll hear readings by Bob Brules, David Malone, Sarah M. Titch, and Alana Veach. Let's go ahead and do that now.
Great to have this second opportunity. Why not begin where I left off? It's like the second half of, for those who have arrived, you know, more recently, Earth Day Rant and Rhyme, I wrote as a to honor the 50th anniversary of Earth Day in 2020. So, please save me a place in the first line of candidates. How did air travel become so sanctified? A late cornerstone of economies, fostering capricious dependencies, precluded through all human history, a response now to a deficiency, manifestation of a desperation, where prosperity exceeds creativity and imagination. For it's now a dose of banality, though once a sensation, converging with a TV generation, torpor on the couch but poised with remote. All have acquaintance with this anecdote. Extrapolize to a bizarre possibility, the stretch of the venerated normalcy. It's a brief holiday in a remote galaxy, or a visit to beautiful Alpha Centauri. Equally vacuous, specious, and injudicious, one might choose Sirius. It is, after all about us. For us right now, no sacrifice, externalized costs, and roll the dice. Transit a steal at twice the price. Many of the options exoticus for we of a culture capricious. So be not deterred, all costs are deferred. Simply a shift of depredations, bequeath it all to future generations, further promote the desolation. How keenly felt the tough privations by those avoiding such vacations. If they're needed to save your neck, best consider VR tech or support your local holodeck.
Let's give Bob another hand and bring up David Malone.
This is a short prose work. It's called Enoch. And this comes with an epigraph, too, from Genesis 5. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Two parallel incisions, surgically cut, climbed the length of his right arm, from the back of his wrist to his shoulder. The incisions aren't dressed, and there's seepage between the staples. Looking pained, he says the infection in his arm is really an infection in his blood, which has now reached his heart. He says he's nowhere to go. What he owns, he carries in several bags in his other hand. I guess he's about 30, with a history of intravenous drug use. How else to explain the blood infection? I was in the hospital, he says, but I walked out. Look what they do to you there. I mean, how is this supposed to help? Now the bleeding won't stop. His arms are thin, emaciate, as is his face, over which his lank hair falls, but his legs are swollen inside his jeans. It was painful for him to get into the car, I could see. He says he can't eat. He says he can drink water, but nothing else stays down. His t-shirt is brown, and he wipes the incisions against it, and not for the first time. Don't worry, he says, I won't get any on you. His condition makes me uncomfortable. I see, too, he's made a bit of a mess of the car door. I ask if he has family in town, a mother, but she's no good. Shelters, or maybe a motel? Who'll take me looking like this? Besides, I've been kicked out of most of them. I don't always get along with people. But he has some money. I took him first to Money Mart at Princess Street in MacDonnell. He flagged me down on Brock Street near MacDonnell, and Lord knows how he got there, where he cashed a government check. Disability, I supposed. Now he's back in the car again, and we're just driving. He says he's looking for shade, maybe under a tree. It's a warm and muggy July day, and I think he's content to sit in the car for now because I've got the air conditioning on, and it's cooler than outside. Do you know any, he says. Trees, I say. How about a walk in to get your arm looked at? Now, I've had it with doctors. Maybe just to get it wrapped. I said, I've had it with doctors and anyone else who's trying to tell me what to do. Well, how about Churchill Park, I say. It's a little quieter than City Park. It's not too far, and there's plenty of shade there. He says, okay, and so that's where I take him, coming to a stop on Napier Street, just above Brock. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out money to pay me. Then, still looking pained, but also frightened now, I see, he's turned very pale all of a sudden. He takes his bags and struggles to get out of the car. Are you sure this is where you want to be, I say. Are you sure you aren't effing deaf, he says, slamming the door. I watch as he stumbles toward a clump of pine trees near the center of the park. The trees, blackish green, are all at least 70 feet tall. I watch as he collapses under them. Then I get out to wipe down the passenger door. I work a few more hours till 4. Then I park the cab and get into my own car and head back home. As this is not far from Churchill Park, I go by there first. Parking at the spot where I let him out earlier, I see his bags under the pines, but not him. I get out of the car and walk towards the pines. In the fallen needles by his bags, there's a dark stain and maybe 20 staples. I turn and call out. I even look up, but there's nothing. There's only the stain, his bags, and the staples. I search elsewhere in the park, which isn't very large, but I don't see him. There's only the stain, his bags, and the staples. No trail leads away from them, nor is there any sign that he might have been taken away by ambulance, say. The ground around is too undisturbed for that. There's only the stain, his bags, and the staples.
So we give David another hat and let's bring up Sarah Emtage.
Gonna need a moment. That was good. This is an old favorite of mine called, I have different names for it. Let's go with Bottled Ship. I like that name for it. Okay. I'm the captain of a bottled ship afloat on glassy seas. A dreadful calm has taken grip, but I am at my ease. And so I go and stroll the deck to hear the planking shudder and scrape away to keep in check the wood glue on my rudder. While overboard and far below inside the fish's tank, I see there in the afterglow Atlantis where it sank. And the day may come when this glass will crack and the wind will fill my sails. So I'm practicing my forward tack, and I'm ready for the gales. Thank you.
So give Sarah another hand. Let's bring up Alana Beach.
So when I smile, I'm one of those people whose gums show. And I didn't think it was so obvious because I have a twin sister who's, I think her gums show more than mine do. But my partner made it, told me that mine show more than I thought they did. Anyway, so I'm contending with this, and I'm also contending with a lost vehicle. And, above teeth too small, I smile with my gums because my teeth are too small. Some of them left with the car wrapped in red, toothless, because it had no hubcaps. One by one, they went missing, leaving my gums above my teeth too small to fill the opening between my lips. Too many inches, too large a gap for me alone to occupy. Yet still, you make me laugh, make me show you my gummy body, because the joke that walks between us is too good to miss, too good to leave unaccompanied. I smile and smile again, aware of the pink flesh above the bone, the rims now rusted because the silver fell off somewhere, taken before I could cry.
And you just heard from the August 6th and the Journey Continues monthly open mic reading at the Elm Cafe. Readings by Bob Brules, David Malone, Sarah Emtich, and Alana Veach. Up next, you're going to hear readings by Anne Graham, Abby Miole, Judith Popiel, and Will Anderson. Here we go.
So give Alana another hand. Let's bring up Anne Graham.
Boy, we jumped a few people, didn't we? Okay, this might sound familiar to some people, but I swear it's new. Believe me or not. It's called August because it's August. I'm grateful it's August, yes I am. I know we'll have thunder and some rain, but the sun will shine as I take my walk. Yes, I'm grateful it's August. Yes, I am. I hear and see the birds flying overhead. They sound so full of happiness and joy. My soul flies, fleeing, finding freedom. I'm so grateful it's August. Yes, I am. I often walk up Skeleton Park, and that's what the locals call it for a lark. The old cemetery, but it's not at all scary. Yes, I'm grateful it's August. Yes, I am. August, you surpass your given name.
So give Anne another hand. Let's bring up Abby Miole.
You forget your power. You forget you are the flame of a thousand suns, the body of billions of solar systems combined, a wave wading through space-time, a field of waves interfering. You forget that chaos on one level is harmony on another, and everything is here to help you evolve. Even your illnesses and all your ailments are not your enemies, and everything we call evil is just a frequency that is low. Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Everything we call burdensome is just an opportunity to grow. And when you dive into your subconscious mind, offer a hand to the hurting child inside that has been waiting to hear you, waiting to remind you of your power. Thank you.
As we give Abby another hand, let's bring up Judith Popiel.
Okay, so this is another poem about the poplars. And I'd just like to mention there is a program that's going to happen in November 17th. I hope that's the right day. It's a 24-hour program put on by a man who I've been studying with, who lives outside of Vienna. and he gives courses in shamanism, and I've been studying with him for a couple years. So he has put together a program that's, it's 24 hours, and it starts at 8 o'clock at night, and then it ends the following day at 8. So last year he didn't do it because there was too much chaos, and also the war in Israel started, so he didn't feel it was appropriate. So I did participate in the second year, and he's asked me to do an hour of the 24 hours. So if I can explain it properly, each hour is devoted to a different group or person or whatever doing something very unique, very spiritual, very uplifting, very different, and it's quite amazing. Both times I participated in, I managed to keep with the program for all but 4 hours because I just had to sleep for a while. But it was quite exciting. So it's all on Zoom, and there's people from all over the world that are involved in this. So Roland has asked me to do an hour of poetry and workshop, like people will be actually doing things in my hour related to poetry and to the natural life and the types of poems that I write about the forest. And so I'm just telling people about it because if you're interested, it's something very different, very unique and fun, and you'll love it. So he also runs a program, I shouldn't be quiet, but that I'm involved in called the Peace Laboratory, and we meet once a month, and we are asked to walk in different areas of the city or in the forest or whatever, and to tune in to what is there. What is the vibration of where you are walking? And we are asked to walk with no cell phone. I'm told I can't do it with my dog, but I told Roland I'm not going anywhere without my dog. So I do it with my dog, but I go in the city, and then to write down what we experience in terms of the spirit of what is there. And Roland feels that this is very healing to the planet. So it's very fascinating to hear what people experience in their walks and to document what you are experiencing as you walk in the city or in a forest or along a lakeside or whatever. So that actually perpetrates me or inspires me to walk more and more. Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you. Sorry, my poem's short, so... And it's again about the poplar grove. Whistling poplars, sounding your message like a chorus of flutes in a symphony, standing tall, 100 feet maybe, amidst an abandoned sacred shoreline along the Bay of Quinte on Mohawk territory in Deseronto. These treasure trunks carve their way through this millennium of years, probably 100. Their no fear, no their wear and tear from season after season has no fear. Experiencing all types of weather, they flow along by this still and quiet bay, standing tall, carving their circular patterns of growth. I am sensing a degree of protection that they bring. Thank you.
So give Judith another hand. Let's bring up Will Anderson.
OK, Okay, I'm going to keep reading from the same story, but I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, so it's hopefully going to sound a little bit different. An irradiant man walks a narrow path bounded by obstructions. His eyes look down on all the others, those who cannot help but walk towards him. With their eyes pointed down at the ground, they do not see him coming. And yet, once he becomes just a bit too close, they have no choice but to look up, right up at him. Still, they keep their distance, parting to each side as they slide right on by. They do not slow down. They do not look back. All except for one small boy, the only one who dares to look back. Right back at him. Clearly, the boy does not yet know to look away from whatever draws him in. All of a sudden, the boy slowly starts to slow down. Then, just as suddenly, he stops and stands, absolutely still. But after only a brief moment of hesitation, the boy turns right around and starts to walk back towards the man, against the flow of the others who continue to walk on straight ahead. They do not give way. They do not fall back. And so, through the gauntlet, the small boy goes, bouncing back and forth between their supple bodies. Clearly frustrated, the boy begins to violently shake. Immediately, the others move away from the boy, pressing themselves right up against the obstructions, giving the boy the space he so desperately needs. Now free, the boy starts to calm down. Still, once again, the boy immediately makes another move towards the man. However, his strides are far too immense, effortlessly covering distances the boy will never overcome. And so the boy steadily becomes only more and more distant, falling further and further, further away from him. Dispirited, the boy turns from the path and walks right through the obstructions with his head held high. Without breaking his long prophet strides, the radiant man glances back at the boy. Thank you.
And from again, the August 6th, and the Journey Continues open mic reading series. You heard readings by Anne Graham, Abby Mioli, Judith Popiel, and then Will Anderson. Coming up next, readings, you'll hear readings by Sonali Samaya, Keen Ryan, Remy Miller, and Kinman Young Tai. Here we go.
As we give Will another hand, let's bring up Sonali Samaya.
Can't remember if I've read this here before, but my mom came today, so I felt inspired to reread it. Someone once said that the sun isn't aware of how beautiful it is. All it sees is what it does. The same way the women in my life describe their bodies as shapeless when I spent time memorizing their proportions, mentally thanking the universe for combining their DNA in a way that has created such beauty. The women I know tell me that they don't see their own kindness, as if my reality would be legible without the light they provide for me. They say they want to be better without recognizing how hard it was for them to simply manage being okay. The women I know have accomplished the impossible with a smile. They adapt to the unimaginable and claim they know nothing about anything, my loves. Listen when I say you are everything. The moon could not light the night sky without your existence, and I would not have a place to look when I'm blinded by my own rays of heat. The women I know deserve the pedestal that they've made for themselves, and they continue to hold my arm for balance while I learn to climb up my step stool, soon to be pedestal.
So give Sonali another hand. Let's bring up Keen Ryan again.
Hi, this one's called Ivory, and it's about war. Expiration date on your birth certificate. My, I've got the perfect pen for it. Press the pink button, worn nub of a blue bruised thumb. Light the air ablaze, a glowing charcoal husk of nodes, lungs cocooning fire. Scream steam for your mothers, a screaming seagull rains hot white shit relentlessly. Repent gratefully, wasps communion's wrath, a larger swash of ash. Shoot me for piano keys, but please don't play an elegy. I can't forget the look in your eye when you darted from my gaze. Up in the room, me hanging on a pie. Your uncle's writing slabs again, a marred screen of smoke sketched when, watching etchings burn, their charred flesh now dark enough for Yanks to turn the cheek at. Why are you writing in Goebbels' diary, an IBM tattoo and Hugo Boss shoes? When you project, your bulb burns bright, like hot, white like hot phosphorus light. Metaphors are handy when read. Black stains on your white dress, white stains on your black vest, vestments set out for funerals of an entire land of dead. Shoot me for piano keys, but please could you remember that should too, sparklers of the on the 5th of November, hit the haystack, then the flames could consume the two of you. The elephant thuds loudly throughout the west, weighed by pockets lined with cash and lead. Metaphors are useful things. Red petal vine out of ashen soot, you gather what I'm scattering, no ifs, ands, nor buts. To take my piano keys and only play a sad melody about me, me, me is really some ragtime on mine. Blood won't wash away, it boils under the lamp, sticks to the pavement, like shadows under phosphorus, a child's etching, a joke chalk outline on the concrete counting 1 to 9. Metaphors are priceless. No money need be thrown at them. No expenditures be expelled. They need be bribed, bullied, sought, fought, nor bought. For they are free.
So give Keen another hand. Let's bring up Remy Miller.
This is called What Else Can I Say? What else can I say? I think you're enchanting, but not enchanting as in delightful, enchanting as in spellcasting, as in bewitching, as in time and space become intangible concepts when I'm with you. I find myself compelled to stay a little longer, linger for a few more without a conscious permission. Something cosmic in you enthralls the cosmic in me. Thanks.
As we give Remy another hand, let's bring up Kin Man Young Tai.
Okay. July 16, 2024, in mine, Trinidad, my old homeland, it's murders and this one murder and grief. Near the spear, the notes on the murder of Raymond Chu Kong. Chinese in Green Street Arima, a laundry with a steam stack, and his works on stage or sets in memory with fun and wood. 17 in a week, his included Eyes to the Dread. That last the Buddha faced and others to eventually know. and he with compassion, how real and final it remains. So enlightened, he smiles the infinite and sky, knowing it's all life, able to sidestep desires, to reach and grow a soul. Long full, and now less, by the vanities plied by this world. Catherine, a dear friend, weeps, her friends despair. And Francis seeks reasons. Should we kill to stop the killings? Let them die too. It's just an exchange of blows with the wind. A life is like a day. And here are 14 lines in my words to question qualities, even as I slap dead a mosquito. Thank you.
And you just heard again from the August 6th monthly open mic at the Elm Cafe readings by, Sonali Samaya, Keen Ryan, Remy Miller, and Kinman Young Tai. It is 41 minutes after 5 o'clock. And coming up next, you'll hear the final readings in the event by Leo Roberts, Eric Folsom, Tessa, Mars, Kelly, Bob Brules, and me. Let's go ahead and bring that up.
As we give Kinman another hand, let's bring Leo Roberts.
Okay, so this one's starting to escape me. I've watched 3 movies. I need to rewatch another 3 movies. There's like another 4 movies I need to watch. I think I need to reread Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell. So this will take me a few more months to finish, but I thought I would take it out for a spin, see if it has a good mouthfeel. So a bit of a history lesson, because it involves an unfortunate term, Manic Pixie Dream Girl. So it was coined in 2005 by a blogger who's describing a bad movie. The Manic Pixie Dream Girl, a character who exists solely in the fevered imaginations of sensitive writer-directors to teach brooding, soulful young men to embrace life and its infinite mysteries and adventures. Notice how the operating words here are that the writers are writing women poorly. Like, this is about men who are being criticizing, like, men. The term kind of devolved over the years, and it eventually became like a way to demean and categorize women for like having dyed hair or for having a zest for life, which it's really sad. Like, this is
being cat lady.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like, there's like a nugget of gold in this definition, like brooding soulful young men. So that's the title of this piece. I dedicate it to Jim Carrey and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I'm sometimes told I have a tortured soul, and my first thought is always, I'm not hot enough. For the brooding soulful men that grace Hollywood screens are sharp of jaw, but soft at heart, with a gaze that invites pity, but deserves love. The tempestuous tumult of their precious little minds require the delicate touch of women of fantasy, the author's fantasy. The hero's journey takes on Odyssean proportions, the call to adventure, a tumble in the office, her papers fall to the ground as he falls for her, the meeting with the goddess, self-explanatory, atonement with the father, the forgiving of mommy issues. And, they fall in love with the prospect of liking themselves and neglect the woman that it comes with. And they retreat to the lonely little bachelor pads that they're lucky they can afford. That's it. I need to watch 12 movies. Goodbye.
As we give Leo another hand, let's bring up Eric Folsom.
A short poem, and the explanation will be longer than the poem. So I've been writing these translations of, creating these translations of Jean Cocteau's poems, French into English, and doing a really bad job. So if you want to drive yourself crazy, try doing this. Anyways, I'm still not sure that I've got it right, but it's better. So this is number 32 from a series called Cryptographies, C'est la Science. And my English version. If the suits take advantage, create weapons from your faults, think they soar past your knowledge in skies where fake eagles vault. Never then collaborate, souls with suburban hedges. Hellebore, recalibrate and make wise my foolish edges. Thank you.
Give Eric another hand. Let's bring up Tessa.
This is a bit of a silly one, but I like it. It feels nice to read. I wrote it when I was at the downtown transfer point, and I was looking across, and all of the windows looked empty, and it was a weird feeling. So this is that. It's called Honeycomb Halls. One day, when the bees move in, they'll build businesses and they'll buzz of busy days, and on the bus they'll ask, how are the boys? When the bees move in, they'll bring their best with them in a briefcase, and they'll fill the blank walls with bookshelves and cover them in pollen. I walk the honeycomb halls, the barbed blank space between, polygons bound through bickering. When the building's barren, we'll get our honey from the banks and we'll both buzz west. We'll see the bands, the bakeries, and the bars, corners untraceable on a map. We'll find a brand new blank space and pack it up with sap. You'll think of me when you dust the pollen off the books, and when your tea tastes of me, I'll be in my honeycomb house thinking of the hexagon hollows.
Give Tessa another hand. Let's bring up Mars.
So I think I've read this one before, but I'm going to read it again. It's been a long time. It's one of my faves. Just thinking about dualities. It's called Dissolving Dichotomies. Indecision stagnates directionality. Words are heard. Meaning is lost. Wonder. Wondering the role of interest, weaving through the yearnings, questioning impact. Life feels eager to take up space. Virtues and values intrinsically tied to ego, sometimes at odds with the divine. Together, we foster dilemmas. Moving towards synchronicity, the paths are seldom cleared. Intuition guides and often eludes consciousness. I am not hearing much of anything, so perhaps the silence holds the truth. The truth is in the yearning of presence in a journey bound by shifting parameters. We weave through the inevitable, sowing seeds of grace and surrender, uncertain if they will sprout. The earth urges us to forage for what we need by inviting us into relation of reverence and restoration. Moving towards wholeness, dichotomies dissolve and dualities integrate. Thank you.
As we give Mars another hand, let's bring up Kelly again.
Okay, this is a bit of a longer one. The last poem had to do with the descent of a mental breakdown and how you eat yourself away. This is about the wisdom that comes from the crash itself. It's called Who You Are. The wave is coming to kill you. Thousands of tons of water barreling towards your home. A home you've long built around the strong pillars that were born with you. Constructed with the brick walls that face the world with your identity windows for what you let in from that world, a roof to shelter you from life's many cruelties, and rooms to follow the path of your peculiar personality. Then you filled your home with crap from the outside. Various trinkets so that guests will think you're cultured, that you have a personality that's safe and interesting. Your charming fakeness. The wave is about to smash through your walls. What do you hold on to? The pillars or the trinkets? Hurriedly, you pick up as many trinkets as you can, collecting them in your arms, thinking you could salvage them if you get up the stairs in time. But once you see the walls blown away by the force of the violent water, you drop all those trinkets and lunge at the pillars, digging your fingers as deeply as they go, bracing yourself as the impact tries to pull you away. In gasping breaks between the crisscrossing currents, you can see all that fakeness smashing apart as the water tries its best to wash you away, cutting you with the debris of bits and pieces of thoughts that are coming to you too fast to make any sense, while you flail like a rag doll, anchored into your home's most stable structure with clawed fingers clasping the decades-hardened cement. At times, you think you can't hold on any longer, that the water is too strong, that the pillars might break, until the water's pull becomes weaker, draining itself through the broken windows on the other side of your house. Cramped from clutching, it is a delicate task to let go one stiff finger at a time. Exhausted, you float numb within the still pool that remains from all the devastation, overwhelmed by the realization that you have to rebuild all of this. The walls, the roof, the windows, the rooms, everything. And you do. And each time you're hit by the wave, you spend less on trinkets and more on strengthening your pillars.
Let's give Kelly another hand. And before I read a final poem, I think I didn't skip anybody, did I?
Bruce, can I salvage something? I left out three stanzas.
Sure, go ahead. Three.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there was
Mark.
There's a great deal of precedence for this, a testimony to how much help I'm desperately in need of all the time. And there can be no secrets around here. I left out the last three stanzas. So, anyway, why not give it another try? Okay. I left off at support your local holodeck. Yeah. Hey, that should have been a clue. Okay. Swat not that mosquito. Do an earthworm rescue. They fit this earthscape better than we do. To be here, they have more right than we do. It's a heavy charge that, in essence, to many would be a big offense. Any volunteers as counsel for the defense? You find no earthworm administrations of edentate regulations. Do they insist on air conditionations? How much hope of their support for yet another airport? Or PT lumber for garden, playground, or dock, or the big commute and more gridlock? Or would they often concede that there is a noxious weed? Then with big consensus, all agreed, chemical warfare will meet our need. How bad is earthworm halitosis from digital world hypnosis? Their own boredom and desperation for flash and dazzle stimulation, or expressing that a life well spent is a craze of commitment to synthetic scent. There is indeed much malodorum. Why not slag the real odium? For us of current edition humanity, knowing the factor of tumorigenic or hormone disruptor can elicit, why on earth would that matter? Earth Day every day, all must insist. A denial of futures if the choice is resist. A tragedy is no inevitability. All can be worthy of rock number three. We're all of the same waters from the primal asteroid showers.
And best not to leave things unfinished, so let's give Bob another hand. And before I read a final poem and end this evening, just a reminder that the next one is September 3rd, so first Tuesday of the month again. Again, Shay's done a great job tonight. Let's give her and also the Elm Cafe another hand. And I always say it, and it's like, because it's always true, it is all of you that make this the wonderful reading event that it is. We've heard some great readings this evening. Please give yourselves and everybody else another hand. This is really weird. The title of this poem makes me think that I have this thing where I keep using the same titles over and over again. I don't know why. I don't mean to, but if you hear the title, go, "Oh, I know that poem." Well, no, this is a new poem, so it might be the same title, but it's called How It Happens. As hidden, higher truth arrives, it happens not as or why you had imagined it would. It comes instead, in the night, without voice, not in claps of thunder, but in that remembered silence between. You will feel it envelop you, not like armor or even a robe, instead a very slightest of dew. Weightless, it will hang on you, around you, and simultaneous to this, you will sense a weight within you of 1,000 lifetimes instantly lift up from you and then away. Your eyes will follow the shadow as it leaves. You will, in that instant, feel as if you are airborne. Even your breath will become clearer, cleaner. And not so much that air you breathe in, but more the air you exhale. And in this clearing, this cleansing, you will wonder why it took so long for this truth to arrive. But in the next instant, you will recognize, you will sense, you will know that right there beside you, it has and had ever been. Thank you.
And you just heard again from the open mic reading on August 6th, readings by Leo Roberts, Eric Folsom, Tessa, Mars, Kelly, Bob Brules, as he finished up, and then me. And tell you what, it is 58 minutes after 5 o'clock. Let's do this real quick.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Keep up with what's hot on CFRC Airwaves. Find us today on Instagram and Facebook. Follow us at CFRC Music and keep your finger on the pulse of Kingston's best music mix.
And you are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. Please remember that both hours of the show are uploaded to my blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Remain there for 3 years. My heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in today. My huge heartfelt thanks to all of those who took part in this open mic event and who are always there. And also to the Elm Cafe for allowing us to be there once each month. Do stay tuned for 2 hours of saltwater music coming up at the top of the hour, hosted by Rob Carnell. Thank you all again for tuning in today. You've been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM.